We're continuing in the book of Acts. We're up to chapter 4. We're in verse 1. Let's read it. As they were speaking to the people, the priest and the captain of the temple guard and the Sadducees came up to them. While they were speaking, remember Peter was given the main sermon, but it appears because of the plural here that the other apostles and disciples were most likely joining in somewhere and either working with smaller groups or ministering to individuals. Remember, they're in a court area. So again, it may not have been just Peter ministering. He may have been the chief one given the sermon. But again, we don't know how much time has transpired. And maybe some people are asking questions and the other disciples are either teaching or expounding or asking questions. Because it says, as they were speaking, again, it wasn't speaking of just Peter here. So the priest and the Sadducees were bringing the captain of the temple guard to stop things. So he basically interrupted Peter's sermon. And by the time they understood what was being said, this is the priest and Sadducees, they could understand from Peter's sermon and possibly the others that they were being called wicked and needing repentance. And so they began to move against the disciples. So the teaching and the preaching was evidently cut short at this time. It was interrupted. Again, we have to understand the system there. And remember, the Sadducees were priestly, and they were often in conflict even with the Pharisees. Jesus reproved both of them at times for hypocrisy, for greed, for being blind guides or hirelings. The captain of the guard was second in power to the chief priest as far as his job in the temple area to maintain order. He was sort of a sergeant at the arms. And remember, there were so many ceremonies and sacrifices and various things going on in this temple area. And again, some believe that Herod's temple, that the court area could have easily held 5,000 people or more, you know, and various things would be going on all the time. And so someone had to be in charge. They did not allow things to get out of order. They dealt with these things. And again, the priests, the Sadducees, were the foremost in authority. And this captain of the guard, he would be a priest himself. He would be of the priesthood of the proper tribe, tribe of Levi. Under the law of Moses, they were given authority and power to maintain the sacrifices, the worship, and make sure things were done properly according to the law. But most likely, some of these priests and someone there was listening to what was being said, and they took it back, you know, and they basically said, we have some strange people or laymen. They knew they wouldn't have been the priests, and they're gathering groups, and they're preaching and teaching, and probably the name of Jesus was heard again. Remember, they just had this big fiasco as far as they were concerned that had happened months before. So nothing went on in the temple area without the Sadducees having some kind of control or knowledge of. So they would have had people to inform them if things got out of order, and this was what was happening. They were speaking and preaching, and actually from the Sadducees and the people, they probably took this, that they were stirring up trouble. You know, if they were speaking against them, obviously they found a problem with this. But in verse 2, when the Sadducees came up to them, verse 1, then verse 2, being greatly grieved or disturbed because they were teaching the people and proclaiming in Jesus the resurrection from the dead. Okay, remember the Sadducees were hearing and being reported to that this Peter was preaching something about a resurrection, and again, of this Jesus whom they officially put to death previously. So here these men are proclaiming this same person who's been put to death, proclaiming him to be the Messiah, proclaiming that he had risen from the dead. And Peter obviously was. And he was blaming the Jewish leaders along with the people of having killed this prophet of God, the Messiah of God. The Sadducees were grieved and provoked to anger. This is what the word here basically greatly disturbed means. It means they were angry and provoked. They did not like what was being said. They did not like the message that they were hearing because it was accusing them of evil. Not only were they being blamed for Jesus' death, but this preaching of a resurrection was contrary to the Sadducees' beliefs, remember. They did not believe. It's astounding that we could understand this and that the Jews at that time could understand this and not be disturbed with it. But the Sadducees were different from the Pharisees. They were of the priestly family and the priests came through them. But they did not believe in angels. They did not believe in a resurrection. They did not believe in an afterlife. And it's interesting that the Pharisees believed in both. And therefore they had their conflicts among them. Which later on we'll find the Apostle Paul, when he was called before these elders, that they accused him of being false. And when the Sadducees, who were in control, and the priests got the upper hand, he in his wisdom, remember he used to be a Pharisee, he brought up real quickly, sort of divided the camp. He said, you know, well, we believe in the resurrection, and he quoted that even the Pharisees believe that, and all of a sudden the Pharisees sort of jumped to his side temporarily. He says, well, this is why we have been arrested and attacked, because we believe in a resurrection. Well, immediately, the Pharisees would defend the principle of the resurrection. And so Paul, again, got to be heard and in this case, and he split them because he knew, him being a Pharisee himself in the past, he understood what was going on, and he sort of got half of them to at least give him an ear and listen, where the Sadducees would not have been interested in anything. So you can see why they and their religious systems and belief were directly in opposition to the law and the prophets. The Sadducees, again, were, I believe, to a great degree worse in some ways than the Pharisees. They both had mixed so much tradition. They used the law of God when it suited them, and when it didn't suit them, they misinterpreted or laid it aside. This was why Jesus often called them hypocrites and blind guides, and he says, you strain at gnats and swallow camels. He used several illustrations and words sharply against them. And he actually refuted some of their beliefs about not being a resurrection, which was directed to the Sadducees. And he also went after the Pharisees for some of their perversions. Remember, he used the strongest terms with the Pharisees when he said, and he included all the religious leaders, he said, you lay aside the word of God, the law of God, the law of Moses. You lay aside its main principles and commands for your traditions. And he said, how can you escape the damnation of hell by doing this? So he minced no words with them and accused them of perverting the law and misusing the law, even when they did teach and quote portions of the law of Moses and the prophets. Remember, the Sadducees, to a great degree, like the Pharisees, they were mainly a political structure. Jesus has already said their father was the devil as a whole. He refuted most of the whole system, and he told them they were greedy wolves. They were covetous. So they were like normal politicians to a degree. They were into money. They were into power. They were into control. So again, they were of the world. This is the world system. This is how the world system works. Jesus told his own apostles that they could not be that way, but they could not exercise that kind of authority. He didn't want them. They were in a different kingdom. So what other reason did they have? Think about this. The Sadducees, to serve God, if there was no afterlife, I've often thought about this, you know, what is the purpose of them being religious to any degree, if they didn't believe there was a punishment for wickedness and a reward for righteousness? Well, common sense tells you it was money, it was power, it was control, it was a system that they wanted to maintain because they made money. It's believed that of all the monies that came into the treasury and the gifts, actually in the temple area, they set up 12 various chests, huge chests, and they had designations on them for what offerings will go to what. Again, there were free will offerings. There were offerings for the priests. There were offerings for the poor. And in this, as they collected this, and as they exchanged money. Remember, they were making money by exchanging not only the Roman money, but other money they would exchange for temple money that could be used to buy lambs and sacrifices. And they got a big cut on this. See, this is why Jesus kicked their tables over and let the doves and the pigeons go free. He says, you've taken the Lord's house and you've made it a den of thieves. And see, they purposely did this on Passover when they would have thousands upon thousands of lambs being brought. Didn't matter what kind of shepherd brought the lambs, he could not go anywhere or sell these without the Sadducees and the priests having control over this. So what he would have to do is he would bring in his sheep and lambs and goats and so forth, and he would sell them to the Levites, and of course they would get a cut rate, and then they would pay him, and then they would in turn sell these, which had been expected and improved by them. Then they would sell them back to the people, and they made profits on this. There was money to be made. You know, the same as they were the in-between man, but they made lots of money because nobody's animal could be sacrificed without their approval. Again, if they wanted to sell their sheep and lambs, it had to go through the system. There was no way to sideline this. Then when they exchanged money, the same thing, they got a cut for the exchange rate. And they would make the people take their Roman coins and their local coins, and they would have to buy the temple money. And in doing this, they may get a 10, 20% cut. Then they would give the temple money to the people. Then the people would go within the court area to where the various groups and herds were kept during the feast time, and they would buy a lamb, or they would buy the pigeons. And who got the money from this? It is believed that the high priest family alone probably took 25% or more of all the money. So they were made rich by these offerings, by all anything that came in. They got their cut. And this is why Jesus beat them with the whip and called them thieves, a den of thieves. You know, they used God and his law and his sacrifices to merchandise people. They were greedy and covetous. And so this was the system that was going on. So you could see why they had to maintain control. They didn't let anything go on that they didn't have somebody who didn't bribe them, pay their way, or get their approval. That's the system. And again, it's like most politics in many areas. It's just done in different ways. That's the way of the world. So again, if there is no afterlife, that's the only reason they would be religious. There was money in it. There was no other reason for the Sadducees to stay into this. Again, even Paul himself, who was a Pharisee at one time and approved by the high priest, remember, he come out and himself said this. He had a similar view of what we're saying here. If in this life only we have hope, there is no resurrection, there is no reward for righteousness, then Paul himself said, let us eat, drink, and be merry, for we die, and we're not going anywhere. Well, obviously, this was the attitude of the Sadducees. We might as well make some money out of this, since this is the only life we're going to be living. We might as well enjoy it, and they did. And they did it as hypocrites. They did it as representing God. They would have been better off to go out and rob people in the byways, even though that would have been a great sin, not the greater sin that's going to come upon the priest, because again, Jesus said, they shall receive the greater damnation. Not only will they steal and rob from people, they will use the name of Jehovah. They will use the covenant God's name to do this. So therefore, they add greatly to their sins. Okay? And so this eating and drinking and partying is what Paul meant when he's saying this. You know, he's simply saying, you know, if this is true, he himself said, if I've suffered all the things I've suffered for just this life, he himself said there's no justice in that. There's no reward in that. He said, just throw off restraint. He says, you're better off to eat, drink, and be merry. And what the eating, drinking, and marrying meant, it meant to, you know, have the drunken parties, to have sexual orgies, just to all the pleasures that you want. This is the implication. And we find this very thing happened with the children of Israel, remember, when Moses delayed his coming down from the mountain. He didn't come down in the time they thought, so they just threw off religion. They said, well, we don't know what's happened to Moses and his God. What are we going to do? Well, let's have a party. Let's just make up our own God and let's just have a nice party. And that's what they did, remember. They cast off godliness. They cast off the laws of God that God had been given them. And they said, let's enjoy the pleasures of sin. The most immoral and wicked of these people, again, they led thousands into this attitude and they began to throw a big orgy and a party. And again, later on, we find that the Levites that were not involved with them at the time and God himself killed thousands of them for this. The ringleaders and the ones who promoted this and were involved in this. But see, they did the same thing though. They came to this conclusion, well, we don't know where God went now. He's left us and Moses, our leader's gone, so we got to do something. See, again, they were not willing to wait God's timing and find out what was going on. They decided, oh, enough's enough. Let's just throw off restraint and enjoy ourselves. And God destroyed them for this. They suffered because of this. So again, this is the type of people we're dealing with, the Sadducees. Again, we would say they have no real religious honor. They're not worried about the afterlife because they don't believe in it. So again, you would think, why would a person be moral, upright, honest? What advantage is it? You know, think about it. What advantage is it if there is no punishment for wickedness or there is no reward for righteousness? Then people might as well do what they want to do. Common sense dictates this. Okay. And so again, they did not like the message. They were preaching the resurrection. They definitely did not like being accused of killing the Son of God, of killing the Messiah. Again, they did not believe this. Remember, even Peter said they were ignorant. They were ignorant to the degree that they were under the devil's deception, and they killed the Lord of glory. Even the scripture said, had they known he was the Lord of glory, they would not have killed him. Remember, they were trying to get him to prove he was the Messiah. Come down from the cross, they mocked him, and we will believe. And it's astounding, like someone said, if he came down from the cross, he would have killed every one of them. They were wicked. He would have wiped them out. But see, and if he came down the cross, the man would not have been saved. Again, they were blessed to a degree that he did not come down from the cross. Because then he would have acted according to what they expected the Messiah and a prophet to do, destroy the wicked people. That's what they were expecting the Messiah to do. They would have been highly shocked to find out that they would have been the chief ones that God would have gone after had he listened to their foolishness. So again, they were in deception, but they were guilty of the sin of killing Jesus of Nazareth, whom Peter and the apostles believed was the Christ, the Son of the living God. He tells them that you crucified him, you killed him. They did not like this. So again, they laid hands on them. Verse 3, they laid hands on them, and they put them in jail until the next day, for it was already the evening time. Okay, so this was going on possibly for several hours. You know, this preaching, the communicating, this wasn't done in 5 minutes again. And so this had gone on for a while. And finally, the priests got all the information they needed. Then they sent out a couple guards to go and arrest these men, you know, and we will have to try them. We'll examine them. So Peter and the apostles were arrested. And they were placed in a holding place, we would call a jail, but they were just confined. It was evening, getting ready to turn into darkness, so they had to wait till the next day to try them. Remember, the law forbid it people being tried at night. But it's astounding, isn't it, that these same Sadducees did not seem to have a problem when they tried Jesus at night, arrested him and tried him during the night and the early morning, because they didn't want the people to be stirred up. They didn't want the people as a whole know what was going on. So again, they proved their hypocrisy. They proved that they only adhered to the law when it suited their purposes. Otherwise, they could change it to suit their purposes. Verse 4, but many of those who had heard the message believed, and the number of those men came to be about 5,000. Okay? So it says that many heard the gospel message. They came to be what we call Christians, though the word was not given to them. They were not officially in the Roman Empire called Christians until Antioch, when the gospel, then it was a Gentile church. They were called believers. They were called disciples of the Nazarene. They were called those of the way. There were many terms used for the Christians. They themselves called themselves believers. and disciples at this time. And so what happened was, after hearing his sermon, and possibly again the sermon of other apostles and those ministering in the court area, they came under conviction. They repented, and they believed by faith in the Word of God. We find that something, the Spirit was moving. When it says the number being about 5,000, most really believe, in the context used here, it's probably including the growing of the church, and it's probably was roughly 3,000 that were converted at Pentecost, so another 2,000 added to that. Some people believe it was separate, but it appears from the wording that's used, most of the scholars in the area believe it was an increase of the 3,000 that were saved. And again, the word used, again, when it says the number of men being about 5,000 men, and the term men would be used in a general term, it did not necessarily exclude women. Again, it's just the terminology and how things were done. So it was a mixture, probably, of people converted that were coming. It was men and women who were converted to the Lord through the main sermon that Peter preached and through the ministry of the other apostles and disciples. Okay, so verse 5, on the next day, their rulers and elders and scribes were gathered together in Jerusalem. Another thing that would have happened here is they were going to call a special meeting. This was not just trying, you know, an individual. This was a system and a group of people, and they were going to deal with this according to the law and their customs. So the Sanhedrin was going to try this. And so it would take time throughout the night. They would have to send messages to those who were members of this body, lots of Pharisees and Sadducees and stuff, and to let them know there was going to be a trial the next day so they could be sure to be there. So the following day, the apostles were brought for trial before the religious leaders, elders, and scribes, which is used. Again, the apostles were kept in jail overnight, and the authority coming to examine them would have been preparing themselves and listening to stuff. Again, we forget that a lot of the trials and things like this were not done according to what we would think, our system. A lot of times things were done by word of mouth, one or two witnesses. They'll get a consensus of what's going on. Again, the system was totally different, but they're going to call these people to account, and they're going to ask them some questions which they're going to be required to answer. Okay, so the scribes were basically, we would call them the religious lawyers, teachers is what they basically were. They were the group who advised the Pharisees and Sadducees and the other leaders of the Sanhedrin from the legal perspective of what you're doing. We can proceed this way, you can do this, whatever the accusation is. If it comes under a certain crime, it had to be done a different way. If it was done under certain other auspices, then you had to have various witnesses and proofs. And again, you know, they had their system, and these were their secretaries and their lawyers that handled this. Because outwardly, remember, they were very particular. They wanted people to understand that they spoke for God and they were just in all of their dealings. They wanted to keep everything, you know, above board, even though they were scandalous. Or you could basically say as a whole, today they would be compared to wicked lawyers playing the game and using the system to their own advantage. But again, in case anyone challenges, because you have to understand there are occasions that Pharisees and Sadducees were charged with crimes, and they were brought before this group, and so they had to be careful. These people would know the laws and know how to outmaneuver them if they didn't have the facts there. Again, there was a political structure where people rose to power and people fell out of power. And sometimes people, again, were bribed. Some people were manipulated. Some people were slandered to get position and power. It was the same in any worldly political system. The same things went on. And again, the scribes had to deal a lot with tradition also, not only what they called the law of Moses over the many hundreds of years. They had acquired many rules and regulations. Remember, Jesus accused them of that too. They had so many rules and regulations. There was about 649. And yet the law only prescribed somewhere around 50 to 70 some, and that's how they had so added and manipulated and made it so complex. You know, it's like you hear today, you know, the situation is so complex, there's no simple answer. You have to pay a lawyer, and he gets so much of your money because only he can study and tell you what's going on. Now, basically, this is the same thing back then. So this was a big, important meeting. So the Sanhedrin was a group of around 70 men, and it was made up of the rulers, the elders, and the scribes. It would be packed with as many well-known Sadducees, because they were of the priestly family, as they could get in there. There was a struggle among how many of each group could maintain so many seats. Again, we find it's like our own system of government with the Senate and the House. They have the rules, and they know when they can do this and they can't do that, and how they're to fill these seats. And this was what was going on. Verse 5 up here, they were gathered together in Jerusalem. Some people believe it was outside the temple area. Josephus, the Jewish historian, he spoke as it being somehow like an outer wall area that was not a part of the temple structure itself. But others believed it was a part of the temple property. You know, it was a big chamber that was maintained. But under the law, the 70 could meet anywhere that the priests decided they wanted to meet. So it was not like it had to be a particular place. If it was for convenience sake, they had been known to meet at the high priest's home at times when necessary. So again, this time we don't know exactly where this meeting was. In verse 6, it says, and Annas the high priest was there, and Caiaphas, and John, and Alexander, and all who were of high priestly descent. Again, they were all related to some degree by being of the tribe of Levite. But again, as in many of these systems, you were advanced according to a bloodline, according to politics. You rose among the ranks. But again, only those of the Levitical order could be priests, and they, again, would have as many there as they could. Again, they had the same thing we have in the Senate of our country. They had seniority by length of days and power and how they served. And what they did gave them power over others and gave them more power. And that's what they were looking for. This is interesting. The same Annas and Caiaphas who were around since the beginning of John the Baptist's ministry and later the ministry of Jesus. So they would take it personally to be blamed for the death of this prophet or both of them. And so I believe this is one of the reasons they are going to state as their reason. We're going to see, they want to find out by what power this guy was healed. Remember previously, before Peter's sermon, they healed the crippled man. But there was more behind this. Again, as they tried Jesus, that was just the top of the iceberg. That was just the opener. But that wasn't the reason. They were looking for many things. Remember, as they did with Jesus, they were always looking for a way to get him. They was always hoping he would slip. They would debate him, hoping he would say something that they could use against him. But this is going to be the pretext, mainly, is about what power did you use to heal this man? We're going to see this come later. But again, there'll be questions that they'll want to ask. So again, to not only take it personally, they're being accused of murdering the Son of God, the Messiah. Remember, too, the people as a whole, they feared these Sanhedrin and the priests, because they had the power to excommunicate from the temple. They had the power to cast people out of synagogues and break them off from the sacrifices and the privileges, and they did not like to offend them. So they were afraid of them. So the high priest and the priestly family were highly insulted that these commoners would actually bring accusations against them. So they probably thought, we'll deal with them, and we'll show the people how to deal with people who come against us, because they're going to consider these people have no power or position whatsoever to be even questioning us. But again, to accuse them of murdering this man that they thought was a false Messiah and had put to death. Remember, the Jews did believe, the ruling leaders, they believed Jesus was a false Messiah, a false king, and they basically told Pilate that. And they convinced Pilate, the Roman governor, to kill him. They threatened him. They intimidated him. They used the same kind of politics to get what they wanted. Pilate judged him under Roman law. He looked at the situation, and he said, I don't see no reason to kill Jesus, this just man. Then they said, well, he claims to be the Son of God, and that's blasphemy, and we want to put him to death. And he began to basically defend Jesus on principle, but again, at the same time, he enjoyed antagonizing the Jewish leaders as they enjoyed antagonizing him. But when they threatened him that they were going to write letters to Caesar and say that, you know, we have no other, he's no king, only king we have is Caesar. And they hated Caesar, and the Roman leaders were hypocrites because in their heart they didn't recognize Caesar. But see, they knew how to play the game. And they knew that Pilate had been in trouble in the past politically, and it's believed he was sent to Judea as sort of a punishment. He was sent further away from Rome. And the further away people got from Rome that were governors and rulers, it meant they were out of power. The further they were from Rome, the further they were away from advancement, from power, from money, from influence. So sometimes that's how they were punished. They were just sent out into the boonies, as we would say, and give them opportunity until someone else might decide to give them another chance or not give them another chance. So he did not want them writing letters to the Caesar, who at the time wasn't pleased with it anyway. So he gave in out of their manipulation, but he declared, according to the Roman law and according to the government here, we find nothing against him worthy to put him to death. And even Pilate said, to appease them, he said, let me have him beat. And that was permissible in the Roman law. He stirred up trouble regardless of what he's done. You know, just by stirring up all of this mess, he deserves to be beat. That would be their assumption, you know. And he says, let me have him beat, and it'll be the end of it. But they didn't want it. They wanted Jesus dead. And they manipulated, threatened, blackmailed Pilate to give them what they wanted. And they did. So now Caiaphas, remember there was Annas. Now Caiaphas was the son-in-law of Annas. Okay, John and Alexander being related, again, as it was a tribal family clan. It was the Levites, and among the Levites was the priestly family. And again, they bred among themselves. Did you know the Levites, as other tribes under the law, basically stayed within their own tribes and kept it within their family? It was rare for them to go outside their structures. So Annas ruled openly during John the Baptist's ministry, and Caiaphas was high priest during the Passion time of Christ. So there was like a 25 to 30 year spell that these two men and their relatives were on and off being high priest. So again, the system was strange. It's interesting, over this 30-year period, there were five sons, it's believed, of Annas that were related to Caiaphas that acted in this office. And remember, as high priest, and Caiaphas himself was a son-in-law. And they went back and forth, and people wondered why, you know, when you read this in the Bible, it seems almost confusing. One of them's called the high priest, and then the other one's called the high priest. And we know, according to the law of Moses, there was only one high priest at a time. Well, what was happening was the Roman governors and the civil authorities, you know, under Rome, they could reject the high priest that was chosen by the people out of politics, and if they felt they had been insulted or disrespected by a high priest, they could remove him. You know, they would say, we refuse to deal with him. So he's not recognized. So what the Jews will be forced to do is choose among themselves someone else that hasn't offended Rome, hasn't offended the governor, and he can go and represent them. And then what happened was, though, that privately, what happened privately was Annas and Caiaphas kept the real power. It was like among themselves, they understood what Rome was doing, and in a way, they were still insulting Rome. They were saying, well, you can appoint removers as you will, but we know who our leaders are, and you can play your game. But it would be as if Annas, Caiaphas, one of their son-in-laws, one of their relatives, say, you'll be high priest. You haven't offended them, but they would tell him what to do. He would basically be submitted to them, and they only recognized Annas basically as being the chief high priest among themselves, or whoever he appointed to go in his place. So you can see it was a political structure because, again, the Romans were in control. The Romans could stop the sacrifices. The Romans could cause problems if there was rebellion. If the Jews were caught doing things they weren't supposed to do, the governor, as Pilate and others, they found nothing more pleasurable than to humiliate them and insult them. So you had a three-ring circus going on. A lot of people didn't know this at Jesus' time. You had a three-ring circus going on. You had the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the religious leaders. They were one power. Then you had the Roman governor and those under him. They were the other power. Then you had King Herod, who was a third power. And again, they were over certain districts, over governors over certain. They interchanged sometimes. Some had power. Some had to share power. And all three of them fought each other. The Jews hated Herod. They considered him a Samaritan. He was not a pure Jew. He was not a religious person in his heart. And yet he was considered King Herod, king of the Jews. And again, even the Pharisees and the Sadducees laughed at that. They thought he was an abomination. So let's go ahead and take a break here.